And when you look at Genesis as a whole, it covers thousands and thousands of years and obviously many important truths about God and about ourselves. But the last 25 chapters, it's the whole last half of Genesis, focuses really only on the lifespan of Jacob and his son Joseph. From Jacob's birth, grabbing at the heel of Esau, through to both Jacob and Joseph's deaths in Egypt. So when God slows down the story like that, and when he focuses just on these two people, you know that he's trying to say something very important. Because he had a whole 25 chapters covering thousands of years and really important things. This half is also really important. And as you look at their lives, as you look at the story of Jacob and Joseph, you understand that they have been on a journey. It's a journey towards a great promise from God. And in their life's journey, these men have traveled a long way. But it's not just in distance that they've traveled. When you look at this story, you see that their character and their understanding of God, they've journeyed closer to God. So the journey hasn't just been towards the physical promises of God, but also towards a closeness with God. And in these last four chapters that I'm going to talk about today, we can reap the benefits of their hard life journey as we get examples of godly character to encourage our own walk with God. So let us pray as we look at this. Lord, as we look at this passage, I pray that your Spirit would encourage us as we see the examples of Jacob and Joseph and their godly character and how they have been changed by you. Lord, I pray that your Spirit would talk to us and that you would change us and that from them we'll be encouraged in faith in you. So a bit of scene setting as to where we're up to in the book of Genesis here. And we start our story today in a hot, dried out, dusty land. And there's a travel-worn old man sitting in a tent. The flaps of the tent have been drawn back, and the old man is staring out over a dead land filled with wilting scrub. And as old Jacob sits there and stares out of the tent, he finds himself worried about more than the scenes of famine that confront his eyes. He finds himself concerned with his youngest son, Benjamin. He hadn't wanted to send Benjamin with his brothers to Egypt, back to that paranoid ruler who had accused his sons of being spies. That ruler had roughly demanded that if they ever come back for more grain, they must bring their youngest brother Benjamin with them to prove their story of hardship was true. And of course, Jacob had refused. How could he risk losing his youngest son Benjamin, the only remaining son of his love of his life, Rachel? Wasn't it enough that he had already lost Rachel? And he'd already lost Joseph, you know, Joseph, how he had mourned for Joseph. But in the end, hunger spoke louder than emotion, and Jacob relented as the famine grew dire. He sent Benjamin with his brothers back to Egypt to buy grain again for the family. And I imagine Jacob here closing his eyes and recalling that memory of God's promise from years ago. The promise to him was, I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and your offspring. Your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to west and to east and to the north and to the south. And in you and in your offspring shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land. For I will not leave you until I've done what I've promised you. So that's how I picture Jacob as he waits for his sons to come back from their Egypt grain run. So you can imagine the joy and the excitement when all his sons arrive back safely with grain, but also with the news that actually Joseph is alive. The son you thought was dead is alive. Not only that, but he is actually the ruler in Egypt. And you can imagine the joy and the relief and the, oh my goodness, on the face of Jacob as he realizes and hears this. So, of course, Jacob packs up and his family pack up their stuff, and they start on a journey towards Egypt, where he would see Joseph again and where the family would get relief from the famine. But they stop, and they stop in a place called Beersheba. And Beersheba is part of the land that had been promised to Jacob. It was in the southernmost part of the land. So Jacob stops the family here before they get to Egypt for some reason. And I want us to look at the passage. In 46:1, So Israel, which is Jacob, took his journey with all that he had, and he came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. And God spoke to Israel, Jacob, in visions of the night and said, "Jacob, Jacob." And he said, "Here I am." Then he said, "I am the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for there I will make you into a great nation. I myself will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also bring you up again, and Joseph's hands shall close your eyes." So when God tells someone, "Do not be afraid," what does that mean? Well, it usually means that the person is afraid. So why would Jacob be afraid to go to Egypt? Why does God have to tell him that it is his will for him to go? I mean, humanly, it makes sense for Jacob to go to Egypt. He seems to only have things to gain from going to Egypt. He'd gain relief from the famine for himself, his livestock, and his family. He would get to see Joseph again, and he would get to have the ruler of the land as his son. So there seems to be a lot of human blessing here for Jacob if he was to go to Egypt. So why does he stop? Well, I think Jacob remembers the great promise of God, and he fears leaving behind the land and the blessing that God promised him in Canaan. And now I think this is an amazing thing for Jacob, because previously we've talked about Jacob being the grabber of blessing, which is what his name means, grabber. We've heard he was born with his hand grabbing at his son, at his twin Esau's heel. And Jacob's earlier life was characterized by this attitude of grabbing. He obtained the birthright and the blessing of Esau by grabbing at them. He saw the things he wanted and he grabbed them. But here he doesn't grab what seems good to him, but he stops at Beersheba before leaving God's promised land, the land God had told him to stay in. And instead of grabbing what seems good to him, he comes to God with open palms and moves on only after he knows that it is God's good. I think it's easy for us to ask God about things that are hard in life and to wait on him and to ask him if this is what we should do. But when we see things that seem to be good, seem to us to be blessings, when we have these good things come within our grasp, I think it's not as easy for us to stop and ask God before grabbing. But like Jacob, especially if these things could move us from where God has already put us, I think we need to ask his will. You know, it might be a better job prospect. It might be a financial investment that seems prosperous. It might be an attractive relationship. It might be an escape from a current trial. But I don't think we should reach out and grab with our hands the good we see before we reach up to God and ask if it is God's good. Now here, of course, God confirmed to Jacob that, yes, this is what I want for you. Do not be afraid. I will bless and multiply you there in Egypt. But let's learn from his example of changing from a grabber of what he wants to someone who values what God wants for him. So after God confirms that Egypt is the right place for Jacob to go to, he goes, and he's sweetly reunited with his son Joseph. And the family pitched their tent in a place called Goshen. And Joseph takes five of his brothers and he presents them to Pharaoh. And he tells his brothers to tell Pharaoh the truth. Tell them that we are a family of shepherds. And Joseph knows that the Egyptians have a disdain for lowly shepherds. Any shepherds here? Gav? I didn't see Gav this morning. So no. The Egyptians have a disdain for lowly shepherds, and they understand. Joseph understands that Pharaoh wants to leave them in the Goshen countryside. So I imagine Goshen is sort of like Southland. It's got good sheep farming, not much else. That's not true. I've got family in Southland. I love Southland. But it's out of the way of society. It's out of the way of most people. It's tucked down there in the corner of the land. So sort of Goshen's sort of similar to Southland. And Joseph also knows that it'll be good for Jacob and his family. They'll have some autonomy there. They'll be out of way of the Egyptian culture with all its trappings. And it's also a border region that's close to the land of Canaan, which God promised them. So that's the boys were presented to Pharaoh, and the family settled in Goshen. And then Jacob, the old shepherd, is presented to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh asks him how old he is. Let's have a look at what his reply was. In 47:9, Jacob replies, "The days of the years of my sojourning are 130. Few in evil have been the days or the years of my life, and they have not attained to the days or the years of the life of my fathers and the days of their sojourning." Apart from being a really long-winded sentence and difficult to understand, what he says here, what does this say about a godly character? You know, this statement here doesn't seem to reflect much of a godly character, does it? In fact, it seems quite despondent. He's telling Pharaoh that his life has been a sojourn. You know, it means that his walk in life has been, it's been hard. It's been spent traveling as a stranger, as Rob told us today, rather than a settled life at home. And he says that his days have been evil. But before we write Jacob off for saying this, I want to look at a parallel statement in the next chapter where Jacob is talking not to Pharaoh, but talking to God. And he's blessing Joseph's sons at this point. But he says, "The God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has been my shepherd all my life long to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the boys." So he says here that God has been his shepherd all his life long and that he has been redeemed from all evil. But just in that last chapter when he was talking to Pharaoh, he said that his life had been a hard sojourning and his days had been evil. So how do we reconcile these two comments by Jacob on his life? You know, is it a hard sojourn or is he being shepherded? Have his days been evil or has he been redeemed from all evil? And I think the obvious answer is that it's both. From the human point of view, talking to Pharaoh, his life appears as a sojourning, meeting hardship and evil. And it's true to say this. His life was a hard wandering. Evil did assail him and evil things did occur. But before God, with the eyes of faith, he knows there's another story at play, which we talked about as well this morning, that in these things, God is his shepherd, leading him and redeeming him from the evil that occurred for his good. Since we're talking a lot about shepherds today, I want us to put ourselves in the point of view of a sheep. A sheep may find itself on a long, tiresome journey over difficult terrain, across a land with not much green grass, through dangerous rivers. He might get hungry, he might get dirty, he might get tired. There may be wolves that he hears howling that frighten him. There may be stumbling on steep, slippery slopes. Out of nowhere, a wooden staff may prod him and poke him and push him in a certain direction. The sheep doesn't understand why it has to go on this journey, but the shepherd has a reason. The shepherd knows what's best for the sheep, and he knows the green pastures that he's leading the sheep towards. You know, we are sheep, and we don't always understand the sojourn and the difficulty humanly, but in faith, we know that God is our shepherd and keeps us. Now, there's a very solemn and great Christian song that speaks of this truth.
I just want to be a sheep, ba, 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 ba. I just want to be a sheep, ba, 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 ba. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. I just want to be a sheep, ba, 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 ba. I just want to be a sheep.
So, I guess most of you have heard that song before, but it speaks to this truth here that we are sheep. So, Jacob has developed this a character that knows that his life has been a sojourning. His life has seen evil, but it's a life that has been shepherded by God. And the evil that has happened to him has been redeemed for his good. And this is exactly the same for us. Now, why some people have to go through particularly hard and troubling things in this life, I don't know. It's hard to understand. But God is our shepherd. He knows. And like Jacob, let's trust in his goodness despite our current situation. Now, there's another great character example here where Jacob is blessing Joseph's sons in chapter 48. And I just want to give you a bit of background here. Joseph was married by Pharaoh to one of the high priests of Egypt, and her name was Asenath. And they had two sons together, Ephraim and Manasseh. And you can imagine how these children had been brought up as sons of these important people in Egypt. You know, they would have been in the upper echelons of society. They would have been basically princes in Egypt. And we see Jacob call Joseph and his sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, to see him because Jacob knows that he's going to die soon. And Jacob recounts to these sons what God promised him. He says, God said to him, "Behold, I will make you fruitful and multiply you, and I will make you a company of peoples, and will give this land to your offspring after you for an everlasting possession." And then Jacob does something a little bit unexpected, I think, or I'd think it would be unexpected. He claims Joseph's sons as his own. He says in verse 5, "And now your two sons who were born to you here in the land of Egypt before I came to you are mine. Ephraim and Manasseh shall be mine, as Reuben and Simeon are. And the children that you fathered after them shall be yours. But Ephraim and Manasseh, they shall be called according to the name of their brothers in their inheritance." Now, what could an old shepherd like Jacob, who's had a self-confessed life of sojourning and difficulty and evil events, what could he give of value to these two boys who were akin to princes in Egypt? You know, they were the very upper league of society and the most powerful nation. They had everything the world could offer them at their fingertips. What does Jacob, this old wandering shepherd who has hardly any land to his name and is now dependent on Egypt to survive the famine, what does he think he can give to these princes of Egypt? And more than that, Jacob actually adopts them as his own. Does this mean that they lose their inheritance from Joseph? I think it does. Thanks, Granddad. Thanks a lot. But this event shows Jacob's faith. God's unseen promise is so real to him, and he knows that these promises of God are of so much more value than anything the world can possibly give these boys. And as I thought about this, I reflected on what we often want for our kids or what we want for our grandkids. What do we encourage them in? What do we want for them? Now, must they be smart? Must they do well at school? Must they get good jobs? Must they be professionals? Must they be big and strong? And I've got a story here about my son, Micah. Many of you guys will know about my story with Micah. He was born at 900 grams, so about the size of my palm. He was born very, very small, so he's always been a bit behind in terms of development, and especially in his size and his stature. So I would always, you know, be telling him, you need to eat lots of food so you can be big and strong, big and strong. And this would be a key thing that I'd tell him at dinner table. You want to be big and strong, because clearly me and Judy are quite tall people. He should be tall and should be big as well. And for whatever reason, I see that value of that. I don't know why. Don't ask me. But so it came to teaching Micah about the story of David and Goliath. And we tell him the story, and this is how it goes, and then we would act it out. And you know who Micah wanted to be every single time? He wanted to be Goliath, because Goliath was big and strong. Didn't want to be little David. So we had to change around what we were sort of enforcing at dinner table and stuff. But that just goes to a little pointer to me. Do we find ourselves encouraging and wanting our kids and grandkids to be godly in character, to love and follow Christ as much as we encourage and want them to succeed in this life? You know, there's nothing wrong with succeeding in this life. There's nothing wrong with having the blessings in this life. But do we truly desire the greater blessing for them, the blessing of the promises of God? And do we encourage that above the blessings of the world? So carrying on in the story, Jacob in the next chapter then blesses the rest of his sons with a blessing that's appropriate for them. It's often based on the character they showed in their life. The blessing to his son Judah in chapter 49 is interesting because it speaks of the Lion of Judah, which is a title Christ is given in Revelation and later in the Bible. And we're not going to look at that today, but it's encouraging to see that God's plan for Jesus was there right from the beginning, right from Genesis. It's worth looking up if you want to have a look. But by now, Jacob is old, and he dies. And the family journey back to Canaan to bury his body in the family graveyard. And then they return back to Egypt. But now the brothers of Joseph become worried. Let's look at this in chapter 50, 15. "When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, 'It may be that Joseph will hate us and pay us back for all the evil that we did to him.' So they sent a message to Joseph saying, 'Your father gave us this command before he died. Say to Joseph, please forgive the transgressions of your brothers and their sins because they did evil to you. And now please forgive the transgressions of the servants of the God of your father.' Joseph wept when they spoke to him. His brothers also came and they fell down before him. 'Behold, we are your servants.'" So Joseph's brothers here are expecting Joseph to be like them. Because for a long time, when they were growing up with Joseph, they'd seen him, he was the favorite, and they'd nursed feelings of jealousy, feelings of anger, and feelings of hate towards Joseph. They'd watched their father favor him and not them. They'd heard the dreams God had given him and not them. And they felt hard done by, they felt harmed, and they felt wronged. And these feelings had grown within these boys, within the sons, like tumors. And finally, when Jacob was not around them, because they were off sheep farming and Joseph had come to visit them, Jacob was finally not there. They acted on this hate, selling Joseph into slavery and wishing him dead, really. Now, those sons think that Joseph, too, has had many years to think about the harm done to him. He has had years to plot and to consider how he would pay back the brothers for the evil that they did. And now that Jacob is out of the way, the father that he loves, finally he must act on his feelings of vengeance and hate for the brothers that must be inside him. But of course, Joseph's reply is an example of godly character, an example to us of how we should respond to wrongs or evils done to us. That's supposed to be 59:19, not 19, not 9. But Joseph said to them, "Do not fear, for am I in the place of God? As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. So do not fear, I will provide for you and your little ones." Thus he comforted them and he spoke kindly to them. Am I in the place of God? Jacob reminds us that it is God's place to avenge evil, not ours. And instead, he provided for his brothers, he comforted them, and he spoke kindly to them. And we remember the words of Jesus in Luke 6. He says, "But I say to you who hear, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who abuse you." But how do we move ourselves from this natural tendency to want vengeance, to nurse hurts, and to hate those that harm us? How do we go from Joseph's brother's attitude to Joseph's attitude? And I think we do that only by understanding, getting this truth within us that Joseph states here, the truth that God is using even other people's evil towards us for his good. You know, God weaves these things like a master author to the ending that he already knows is good for us. So I think only when we truly have faith in this can we let go of that natural urge to seek our own vengeance and to cherish bitterness when we're hurt. So if we find ourselves in unforgiveness or when we're hurt by other people, I think we should ask ourselves a couple of questions. Like Joseph, we should ask the question, am I in the place of God? Am I taking vengeance on them in my heart by unforgiveness? Because that's what unforgiveness is. It's internal vengeance. And also we should ask ourselves, do I trust God that he can use even this for good? So Joseph grows old as well, and we see a last example of godly character in him in 50:24. "And Joseph said to his brothers, 'I'm about to die, but God will visit you and bring you up out of this land to the land that he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob.' Then Joseph made the sons of Israel swear, saying, 'God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here.' So Joseph died, being 110 years old. They embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt." And I think death is something that we don't like to talk or think about much in our society, especially younger people. I don't think, you know, I consider myself a younger person. I don't think my generation tends to want to think much about our death, about death. And I think the reason about that is because we don't see promise and we don't see hope beyond this life. But Joseph knows that death isn't the end for the promise of God. And in fact, Joseph gives the command that one day he be carried out so that he will finally rest in the inheritance of the promise of God. And this reminded me of a verse in 1 Peter 1:4, which says that we ourselves have an inheritance that is imperishable, undefiled, and unfading, kept in heaven for us. So that as death approaches us, whenever that is, we can have hope that God's promise to us extends beyond our life here. So this is the story, the end of the story for Jacob and Joseph, and the end of our series on Jacob and Joseph. But we know, as you read on, that God led their ancestors out of Egypt 400 years later to finally inherit the land God promised them. And we also know that the promises of God to bless the whole world through their offspring was perfectly fulfilled in Jesus. So I want to finish with a few verses from Hebrews, which sums up what the story of Jacob and Joseph and the other Old Testament heroes, what it sums up what it should encourage within us. And it's in Hebrews 11:12. These were all commended for their faith. That's Jacob and Joseph in the Old Testament heroes. These were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised, since God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our life. Cool. Thank you.
Thank you, Simon, for that wonderful encouragement to keep in mind that big picture that God has for us, taking us forward, growing us into the likeness of Christ and trying to make sense of it. So we're going to finish our service with singing a rendition of Psalm 23, "The King of Love, My Shepherd Is, His Goodness Faileth Never." That sense reminds us that no matter what, God is there with us in the everyday, moving us forward, ordering our lives so that we might be a part of His big plan for our lives. So let's stand together.